This is gonna hurt.
It's time for the Suffering Podcast.
As a child, safety is amongst the last things that run through your head. We're supposed to have parents and caregivers to think about the dangers so that we can concentrate on being young. This system has been in place for millennia. For some, looking out for another is seen as more of a burden than a duty. Having another life depend on you seems foolish when you're unable to attend to yourself, setting up a recipe for disaster that is bound to fail. A child's life and safety should never be a gamble. Give them a chance so that the opportunity is there. They deserve better, and adults are obligated to comply. I'm Kevin Donaldson here with Mike Felice, and welcome to the Suffering Podcast. If you're a fan of overcoming suffering and overcoming adversity, then we're for you, because that's what we do here, and that's the stories that we highlight. So do me a favor. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, please comment, ring the bell so you can get notified of all of our new content. Now you can join. Follow us on all social media so you can find out what we're up to. On this episode of the Suffering Podcast, we bring back a recent returning guest in Mike Martin.
Well, this is like a 1.5 times.
Correct. You know, you had a 10-minute segment last time.
You did 15 minutes of fame.
Right. And we're here to talk about the suffering of a foster child. There's a lot that we left on the table at Mickey's. We wanted to bring you back in here. We had an opportunity. We had an opening. I said, Mike, come on. Let's do this.
Let's get it done.
Yeah.
Mike, I know you're a very like vibrant person and everything. Just try to sit like Kevin on an airplane for this.
Okay. You want me to suffer here? Huh?
Well, coming in to Philadelphia International Airport in 25 miles sheer winds on a runway that was ice.
Are you a clapper when they land?
No.
Oh, thank God.
No, I'm not a clown.
Oh, thank God.
Before we get into anything, let's throw a big shout out to our marquee sponsor. That's Toyota of Hackensack. We don't trust anybody's police, but we do trust them. So do me a favor. Go to toyotahackensack.com. Let them find you a car. We all know where to go.
Kevin's not a clapper. He runs up to the cockpit and thanks him in his own personal way.
Well, that's because the pilot always comes over the air. He says, you know, I could go for a blowjob and a cup of coffee.
So Kevin's knocking on the door.
Mike's in the back yelling, don't forget the coffee. So each week, as you know, Mike, because I know you're a frequent listener,
I am.
We take a question from our audience. This question comes from Silly String 57.
Was that you, Mike?
No, that sounds like something from the cockpit.
No, that's what Mike's girlfriend calls him.
Yeah. Oh, Silly String. Wait, 57 is his age, and it's a
wet noodle.
Okay.
Exactly. And it says, what is your definition of happiness? Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody says, I'd love to be happy. Very few people know how to define happiness. So, Mike, I'm going to lead this one off with you. What is your definition of happiness?
I certainly can't define it like I was Merriam-Webster or anything, but
it's personal to every person.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Oh, man. You know, I'm a dad, and I have 3 kids. I have a wife. I'm happy. I don't know what it means. It's so odd. I wake up. I have 4 people there supporting me, loving me. You'll see, hopefully, throughout the rest of this show why that matters to me, because some people don't like that, I would assume.
Not to get into the minutiae of what we're going to talk about,
okay?
But I do know I know a lot about your life, and you grew up, and the lack of happiness maybe amplifies the happiness you feel now.
Oh, Mike, tremendously. I mean, I tell my wife this when she gets sad about something silly. I'm like, you ever been on a roller coaster that's flat? They don't make them.
Yeah.
You can't enjoy going down the hill if you didn't go up the hill.
That's a great line right there.
I say it all the time, not to you. You know,
we'll never said it.
We'll use that one.
Okay. Yeah, we'll use
it. Oh, thanks.
Stolen.
Can I trademark that?
Stolen. Even, what is it, the EKG machine? If you don't have the ups and the downs, you're dead, you know? It's hard. It's hard growing up like that. And now I have the ups, and they're great. They're tremendous.
And hope they stay up.
I do hope they stay up.
Exactly. And
it's there's things that happen every day in people's lives that are terrible and tragic. And I like to think that I'm beyond the worst of it in my life at where I'm at now at 38.
I think too many people they're on an upward trajectory. And the minute they crest what they see as a big hill and start to go down, then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
But that sometimes, a lot of times, when people are going down, that's when they enjoy themselves. So that's not some like people. True happiness.
Some people.
You know what I'm saying? You know,
yeah.
You like that ride up because you're getting to the top. Then when you get to the top, some people are self-destructive and they want that ride down.
Right.
Before they have to build themselves back up again.
So so where do you get your serotonin and your your happy thoughts?
Or your happiness
and, you know,
at the top of that roller coaster?
Right.
Waiting to come back down?
Right. Or is it the, is it the ride?
Or is it climb up?
Well, anybody in life who has ever had some sort of great achievement will tell you the same thing. Like, I'll give you an example. Running a marathon. The marathon itself the marathon itself was not the great joy. Mm-hmm. It's and not until you cross the finish line do you understand this. The joy of a marathon is the training of the marathon. It's the journey. It's the climbing of the mountain. What do you do when you climb? When you get to the peak of the mountain, you look for the next mountain to climb. That type of thing. That's the joy and that's the happiness.
The culmination of your training.
Well, right. I guess if you think of it as in sense of a gym, you're not going to get buff, if you will, by not going. Same concept. It's not luck either. I could look at you and be like, wow, you're lucky you look like that. A little different, but you don't look as bad as this, Mike.
Mike, I got you.
Yeah, thanks.
And let me tell you, these two guys work together. So
used to.
I'm an outsider.
Used to.
I moved on.
Yes.
Bigger and better.
I think Kevin got fired.
But it's a daunting question to ask. You know, we talked a little bit about it on another difficult topic to define on our Instagram live tonight. It was the definition of success, you know?
Right. That's easier for me personally.
But a lot of people want success. They just don't know what success is.
I feel like success is more of a spectrum than a line, where happiness could very well be a line instead of a spectrum. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or if you could. I've said enough.
Mike, what do you think?
We got enough time left. I mean,
sure. And that's going to do it for this episode.
Thanks, guys.
Follow us on our OnlyFans page.
I honestly think you could switch the word happiness with the word content. Right. Mm. As long as you're content, then you should be happy.
Yes and no.
Yeah, I know.
There's certain scenarios.
There's definitely certain scenarios, but as long as you're happy in your own skin and you feel good at the point you're at, you're never going to feel 100% because I don't believe there's a such thing as 100% happiness.
Oh, you can always get more.
You know, you take these millionaires and they're miserable. You take someone like Robin Williams, who was a comedian on top of the world. Everybody thought he had everything, you know, and he's laughing and he's making people laugh. And look what happened to him.
Tears of a clown.
So there's never, I don't believe there's ever 100% happiness.
I don't think 100% happiness is good. And we've proven that with this show.
Yeah. I just settle for content.
We could call my wife the day she married me. I mean, she had to have been real close.
She struck gold on that one.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I have some friends that call her by different names.
Yes. I'm sorry, Katie. I did that on our Mickey's Live. I did call Mike's wife by the wrong name, which we had dinner together. So it was,
thank God I've never done that.
My bad.
Yet.
No, so, don't say that. I'm still married to her, Mike. Well,
that's where your happiness is going to go down.
Yeah. Remember those roller coasters?
Once again, I have the benefit of having this question before everybody else. So I get time to ruminate on it and think about it. And I thought, what would be the ideal situation to make me happy? And I believe the ideal situation for me is to live without fear. Live without fear.
That's a good one.
Live without fear for the next day. What's coming next? What bill I got to pay? Where I got to pick the kids up? How I got to make dinner? How I got to have my family survive? And you know, throughout my life, where when I was going through really bad times, I was simply a thermometer. That's all I was. I was a thermometer. I was taking the temperature of everything around me. When through group therapy, through this show, I've switched that to become a thermometer, where now I set the temperature. I don't just simply take the temperature. And I think if you're a thermometer the entire time, you're always going to have that fear. Is it hot enough? Is it cold enough? You know, you're going to have those up and downs like you had said. So living without fear, I think, is the ideal situation to set yourself up to be happy.
That's good. The in response to that, from my perspective, there's so many different types of people. So happiness is relative, I guess.
Happiness is different to everybody.
Right. Because, you know, Morticia Adams cutting the heads off of the roses, you know, somebody out there gets happy with stuff like that.
When you're fearful, I don't know any person that's fearful that's happy. Mm. I think that might be a solid concrete proof. Even those.
I was going to say an adrenaline junkie, maybe.
But that's not fear to them. That's anticipation. That's that feeling. Because we get that before this show. We have that anticipation before the lights and cameras go on. And once right. camera, then we sort of calm down. But we set the temperature on that.
Yeah.
You know,
which is hot, by the way.
Yes, it's freaking. It's
well, because Andrew put these lights in. I mean, geez.
He's trying to make it like Puerto Rico in here. That's what he's trying to do.
It's cool. I wouldn't have worn an undershirt had I known.
I thought you guys wanted to do a show on Aruba.
So you know, that's why I took my pants off.
Oh, that's I get it now.
So Mike's girlfriend, I mean, Silly String 57. Thank you very much for that Wait, question.
That Mike.
That yeah, Mike.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say Mike Martin or Mike Felice when okay. I'm referencing you. Because again,
we could go with young or old.
Parents.
Oh, wow.
Stop naming your kids Mike. It gets confusing when they come in here after you fuck them up.
Every guy should be named Mike.
I'd like
walk
that.
Down street, go, hi, Mike. Hi,
Mike. What's going on?
I just, you throw out a Mike. You go into a crowd and you say, hey, Mike.
Somebody.
50 people are going to tell
you. And those are probably the best guys in that crowd.
But then again, right? You go in the same crowd and yell, hey, jerk off. Every guy turns around too.
And their name's all Mike.
Thank you very much for sending that question in. Keep sending in your questions and we will try to get them on the air. You have lived a very interesting life, and it's a topic that we have not touched on in here.
Sort of.
Well, some Stacey Ellis a little bit.
Right, yeah.
You know, she went through the foster system, and to some extent, your stories collide.
Sure.
But on the end result is so vastly different. Well, not the end result is very similar, because I think Stacey is very happy now. At least she presented that way when she was in here.
Right.
So why don't you give our audience a little bit about yourself?
Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys. I really mean that.
Well, you're always there to support us. You're always there to give us an encouraging word. You don't know how the distance that goes with Mike and I is beyond words that of gratitude.
Well, I think what you guys are doing is incredible. I've met through my weird life. Oh, man. Hundreds, thousands of people that have suffered substantially haven't necessarily found a way to have any
outlets
perfect or support. And you guys know, once you hear, oh, you know what? I've been through that too, or I've been through something similar. There's a bond.
Trauma bond.
Like when we met.
Yeah.
You know, I had no clue who you were. I was like, oh, this douchebag.
You didn't like him.
I didn't. No, I'm kidding. No, I liked him, but
a couple years later, still don't like him.
I'll go a little spiritual on you. I think that was destiny. I wasn't supposed to work where you worked. I was only supposed to meet you. Right. But I'll tell Mike if you don't mind. Kevin came up. He's like, do you know who I am? And I'm like, what a douche. What a dude!
No, you let me suffering podcast jacket on.
Let me preface it. You were starting to get a little bit into your past with me.
Yes.
All right. And you were telling me as if I wouldn't understand. It wasn't you were being adversarial. You weren't being rude. You were telling me something as if I didn't understand.
Suffering. Like
suffering.
Basically.
And that's so yes, right. That question that did seem a little egotistical. Well,
I didn't lie, Kevin. No. You said, do you know who I am? Your chest up.
Did you get his autograph?
I tried. He would have given
it. he wanted to charge you.
I didn't have any cash.
Get in the back of the line. Get in the back of the line.
So then he goes, you ever see Soft White Underbelly, kid? Whoa.
Man, you are telling this story very differently from the way I remember it. Jesus Christ.
So he said,
do you ever read Rich Man Magazine?
I always like people to, I always, when I meet somebody, I do Google them.
I'm not that guy. I want it to be organic. I want it to be natural. I don't want to, like I Googled Mike and I was like, why did I do this?
You know? Yeah, exactly.
I really do. I don't want to take Kevin's word for Mike. I don't want to take anybody else's word for anybody
else. Make your own mind up.
Right. It's the relationship between me and you, because you could be one of the biggest influences on my life, and Mike, Steve, so-and-so, anybody could ruin that. And I think everybody has some kind of positive, even the worst piece of crap you know. Maybe they tie their shoes away that you're like, holy shit, my back feels 10,000 times better.
Why didn't I ever think of doing it like that?
Because of this jerk, you know. So something along those lines, I want it to be organic. And once I did look you up, you know, all kidding aside, I actually got a little teary-eyed, and I was like, oh, man, this guy's been through some stuff, and you know, he came back
Because
you, and I hugged him. I was tearing up. I'm like, you jerk.
Can I tell you? Let me tell you from my perspective. So when you started getting into your story with me, I had a lot of empathy. I have a lot of empathy for people coming here who really been through some shit.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of empathy with you. And I had to. So trauma bond. Mm-hmm. People who have not even shared the same dirt or the same blood,
right.
But people who have been through trauma in different walks of life. It's what bonds Mike and I. Mm-hmm. It's what bonds me with all of the guests. If they've been through some stuff, you're going to know the good times, the bad times, and we're going to be that much more connected. And that's, right. That was my hope with that.
Yeah. And so, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
You take a bunch of kids that were born millionaires. They probably wouldn't get along. They'd be some, it'll be whose dick is bigger.
The polo competition. Friends. Yeah.
It's tough.
Oh, my dad's got more money than your dad. You know, they probably wouldn't get along. You take guys like you said, that have a trauma bond. You're going to get along.
Right. Another lead in on that one. I always struggled with my trauma because it sounds cliche, but I'll say it and we'll rectify what I said later. We'll pick up the damages and pieces. You guys went through an event, right? And that's not, I'm not taking away from your whole life, but you go through an event. You know, I was diagnosed with PTSD. I'm a veteran. So you hear that and you're like, wow, this guy's seen some shit. Overseas, I saw like nothing. I had one of the easiest tours you can imagine, you know. So I fought with my doctor in the VA in East Orange for 2 years, and she's like, "You have PTSD." I said, "No, I don't. Fuck you." Like, I went ape shit. She goes, "I also think you have an anger problem." All right, well, you're close.
You're getting there, doc.
So I'm like, it just doesn't make sense in my head. I saw nothing there that would really dictate.
Was there something in you that didn't want to take away from those soldiers overseas who really
100%
lost those?
Most veterans are like that. From my perspective, you know, I know guys that were hurt bad and they're like, I'm not going for the benefits. I want to leave that money for the people that need it. And it's like, dude, it's a bottomless pit. Just go take the benefits. Yeah. You're entitled. You earned it. You put your life on the line. But I didn't have this big hoo-ha movie story of, man, the fucking bombs were going off and the bullets were flying. I didn't have that. So how do I have PTSD? Like, I really fought with her. And she goes, Mike, you have a childhood. You have a past. This just kind of made it worse again. And I took a couple weeks and I was like, nah, I still think she's full of shit, you know? But I Googled it and everybody loves throwing statistics.
Oh, sure. You didn't make your mind up on that one. You Googled that one.
Yeah. So I saw something, and I'm butchering the numbers. Sorry to all those statisticians out there, but something stupid like 50% of vets that come home from war have PTSD. I'm like, all right. So I have half 50-50 right there. Something stupid like 50% of foster kids have PTSD. But some crazy number, like foster kids who deploy, it's like 98% of them have PTSD. I'm like, fuck. I know the odds a little bit there. Probably in the 98%.
Good gamble.
Yeah, I bet on that one. Yeah,
I don't gamble, but I throw some money on that one.
Right. So here's what I've learned over the 11 years that I've been, you know, in group therapy and talking to different people. Those who grew up in a very solid household usually have an easier time getting through their trauma and their pain from an event.
Mm-hmm.
Those with a jacked up past, they hold on to it much longer.
Can I tell you what I think is, and it's a hypothesis, love and support.
Oh, of course.
You know, if you don't have that support structure, how do you get over something?
We had a guy in here last week, just in case. Okay, he's a photographer.
Just in case what?
That's, yeah, exactly.
Just in case he bails out again, you're coming in.
So Justin had a very, he became addicted to Adderall and cocaine, and he had a very easy time getting over it, mm-hmm. and staying and maintaining that sobriety. When he talks about his parents, they're wonderful people.
Yeah.
They're mm-hmm. supportive. Right. Hey, you need to go to rehab. Let's find you a rehab.
Right.
You know, stuff like that.
Right.
And he's a prime example. Not to say he wasn't addicted to what he did.
Of course.
He had an easier time than some.
I mean, you ever fall in a hole? It's easier to get out of it when someone's there to help you.
Yeah.
It's hard to get out when you're in a 10-foot deep hole and you're by yourself with no escape.
But when you come through a lot of things from your past, it could be one thing that just exacerbates that whole thing.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, that's how your PTSD set in.
It's that straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
So you've grown up a certain way. Where did you grow up? Let's start there.
That is probably the hardest question that I could ever answer. I moved by the time I was 9 or 10 about 40 times. Do you mind if I go back to the beginning?
Sure.
Go right ahead.
I'm going to speed through it if you're okay with that, and then we'll come back and break it down a little bit. So my mother and father, and some of this stuff, I'll apologize to my loved ones. You know, I have 5 siblings. I love them. I don't speak to them. Some of this stuff may hit a nerve, and I don't want to do that. That's not the intention. But this is how I remember it. That's how I'll tell you the story and how I've been told. So my parents were addicts. They got together. You know, it's a good combination. You get a man and a woman. They're addicts, and they get together. Perfect. You get me.
Perfect.
Public service announcement on that one. Yeah. Do pause for the camera.
This is your parents on drugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and this is your offspring.
Yeah. Hi, guys. So they get together. Long story short, there, I'm born. As far as I know, I was a stillborn. You know, my mother was
full
bad. Full. Yeah, I don't know.
Were you born addicted?
No, I don't remember. But
he is now, but he wasn't then.
Yeah, I figure, it depends on what you had, whether you were told that or not.
I don't believe so. But obviously the doctor did something. I'm here. I had a second sister with the same parents. My mother at that point, as far as I know, was clean. She wanted my father to be clean, and it was hard. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever faced addiction, but apparently it's not really easy to break sometimes.
It's pretty tough.
Right. So, and this is, I was born in 85, so there was good stuff back then, you know. It's not like the stuff today, but they separated. He said, hey, I'm clean. And she's like, no, you're not. On a way to a supervised visit with me, I was 4 years old. I might have been my sister as well. He was in a car accident and died. Toxicology comes back. He was perfectly clean and sober.
Oh, wow.
Which is great now.
Yeah.
As an adult, I can look back and be like, you know what? He really was trying. You know, it wasn't a load of bullshit that my mother fed me. Oh, he was a drug. He was an addict or whatever. I can look back and be like, he was trying to do the right thing. So I live with that. Like, okay, there's a check in the right direction. The saddest part of all that is my only 2 memories is in that visitation room, maybe weeks prior, I don't know the timeline, at 4, I'm playing with a Tonka truck, and I hear Michael, and I turn around, there's my dad, and I'm running to give him a hug, and the memory goes blank right before I make contact, and it's devastating. Sure. The second one is my grandfather holding me, and I'm looking at my father laying down, sleeping in a box, and I go, Grandpa, what's he doing? He's asleep, and he's never going to wake up. And that's the second memory and only other memory I have of him. So that's hard in and of itself, you know. So from there, my mother gets remarried to an abusive guy. She has 3 more kids with him. The third one she thought was another guy, so she named the third one after the other guy that she was with. But the first guy was abusive and beating her. And I remember one night we had lived, you know, this was the age of safety nest, right? So I was probably 5. 1990-ish. We lived above a bar restaurant. So, you know, Friday nights, you know, you're in bed at 8 o'clock when you're 5. You get to sleep right away when the band downstairs is cranking till 2 in the morning, you know. So there's part of, you know, how do you sleep? So you're up till 2, 3 in the morning as a 5-year-old. Now you're sleeping in till 11 on a Saturday. It's bizarre.
How did your mother, did your mother try to do anything to mitigate this stuff so you could be a normal child?
I don't think so.
Was she using at the time?
It's possible.
I was going to say, an addict moving above a bar isn't the greatest. That,
it's not good.
No,
but it's not good. Addicts, and I've known enough of them, because listen, it's the first two in the holy trinity of life, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Sex and drugs go hand in hand with each other. So people get high, they have sex.
Yeah.
And then an offspring is created.
So and then they rock and roll.
And then they rock and roll.
You kind of have all 3. So I don't know the full stories with them, with their relationship, what was going on. But so this second guy, He's married to my mother. I think they were married. He's beating her. The deadbolt to the apartment was key on inside and outside. So I think he beat the shit out of her, used a frying pan, whatever it was. He beat the shit out of her, handcuffs her to the heat pole, the radiator, but it was the pipe that came from
the lead pipe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a plumber. Come on. I'm not an HVAC guy either. So she's handcuffed to that. I'm the oldest. I'm 5 years old. I don't know what the fuck to do. I just watched my mother get her ass whooped. Now she's handcuffed to a fucking pole and it's burning her because it's hot. And I can't even open the door to go downstairs to get somebody from the bar, which, you know, that's who you really want to rescue you when your mother's in that situation.
Yeah, you look for anybody. You don't know. You're five years old.
So I remember, and this one was an important one to me because I remember the cops coming, the fire department coming, and they put an axe through the door because they couldn't get in. And I'm like, help, my mom's handcuffed. And what? Like, I couldn't imagine being on the other side of the door now as an adult. Like,
that's one of those calls you go on as a police officer that affects you afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I hate to say it, I was very involved with the police from a young age because we were that family. You know, we were the ones getting the cops called on us or us calling the cops on people. What do I do? Just throw this on the ground?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, perfect.
it's Andrew's studio. Don't worry.
Yeah, Andrew's Puerto Rican. They throw it all over the place.
That was the pile of
them. Yeah. But it's a hard thing for a child to grasp. Especially when they're born in violence, because if that's all you know, that's all you know.
Right. So I knew other stuff. I'm bowleg and pigeon-toed. So I was put in these shoes that had a bar in between them to sleep.
They were my magic shoes.
Never thought of it that way. But you know why they're magic, right?
Because mama said they'd take me anywhere.
They're magic because you can't. When you're 5 years old, you can't fucking stand up in them. You can't even sit up.
That was the way of keeping in bed all night.
Right. So at 5 years old, I'm learning to wake up to go to the bathroom. Well, I'm in one room with three other siblings. I don't want to start screaming, hey, Ma, Ma. So I'm like, Mom, Mom. And I'm wondering why she's not coming in to get me to go to the bathroom. So inevitably, I got to piss. I can't get up physically. I start pissing myself. Over time, I started getting my ass whooped because I'm pissing myself. I'm like, well, come take me to the bathroom. You know, I'm five. It's hard to reason these things. So I became a bedwetter because why wake up? If you're just going to wake up to go to the bathroom and pee on yourself, just fucking stay asleep. It takes one of the hard steps out of it. So that's what happened. So now, on top of all this other bullshit, I'm a bedwetter till about 13 or 14, which is, I don't know if you ever wet the bed. It's fun. You know, it's so much fun to grow up like that.
The warmth.
Oh, yeah, it's nice on the cold nights. If you got dry skin.
For the first 5 minutes, then it gets cool.
Right. So I don't know what the hell goes on with my mother, her relationships. Because from my perspective, if you were willing to pay a bill, she'd be willing to do something for you.
Oh, wow.
Which it's hard to see that. You know, I don't know if you ever saw your parents having sex, but they're your parents. They're not your mother and some random guy. Then we started bouncing around. We would move. My mother would break up with this guy, and we'd move somewhere else, and we'd move somewhere else. She'd break up with this guy, and some of them beat the shit out of me and beat my siblings. And I couldn't beat me. Don't beat my siblings, kind of concept, you know. Don't hit them. They did nothing to you. I forgot though that I didn't do anything to you either. You know,
but you were the big brother,
right? So I'd start fighting back best I could. But you guys are grown men. You ever fight a 6 year old?
Yeah.
He's not putting up much of a fight, you know.
Every other Saturday.
That's your hobby, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing you do on the weekends.
I'm trying to go pro.
There's a league?
Yes. It's 6 year old fights.
Oh, politicians.
Yes.
I got you. Sorry about that. For all my politician friends.
But you just don't have the mental wherewithal in order to deal with this trauma that you're seeing.
It wasn't trauma to me yet. This was how I lived.
It was normal.
Right. So we move. There was four of us. So my mother divorces that guy. He moves with two of my siblings, right? And for lack of a better term, I pretty much never saw them again. Where I struggled was now there's four of us. My mother had another kid, another guy. We move. We're in this place.
Your mother's got to get a new hobby, bro.
Yeah, it was bad. So there's six of us all together.
Or get cable.
Yeah. I think, if I'm not mistaken, she had like two miscarriages and two or three abortions. So she was pregnant more than there's women in the maternity ward right now.
Wow.
And it was tough there. But somewhere around 8 or 9, I think it was 9, I got sick of it all. And I wanted the escape. I was the dirty, fat, smelly kid. I don't know. I wasn't fat. We weren't.
Were?
We Well, I'm fat now. I wasn't fat then. See,
I wasn't even going to go there.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I had to.
Do you know who I am?
That's exactly why I had to give it to you.
Did you Google me? I go to the gym. I can run.
I had to give it back to you.
No, it's good. Kev, come on, man. We can't sit here and be nice to each other.
The children growing up in that environment, it's just amazing what they can get used to. Because we've seen it Kevin, firsthand.
Yeah. I'm going to interrupt you. It's not get used to. It's all I knew.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's
you didn't know any better.
Right. If you grew up in, if you were born in this room and you went outside on a day like today at 8 years old, you'd be like, holy shit, it's the end of the world. It's cold, you know? So somewhere around 8 or 9, I needed to get out. I realized seeing my friends at school and stuff that, fuck, this life that I'm living is not normal. You shouldn't be moving all the time. You know, we'd have picnics. You know where? The fucking food stamps office. Oh. You go there first thing in the morning. You have to pack a lunch because you're waiting for your actual food stamps for hours. It's like DMV in the 90s. Yeah. It was terrible. But my mother, I grew up watching her be proud. Like, I got an extra fucking $50 in food stamps or whatever it was. And it was like, how can I manipulate the system? How can I get more from the government? How can I get more from these guys that I'm bringing home every weekend? So you start to, you know, 8, 9 years old, you start to pick up on shit that your parents don't think you're smart enough to know, but you are. When my father passed, she was getting survivor benefits through Social Security for us, for me and my one sister. And every time the check hit, my grandfather would come over and my mother would be gone for the weekend. Monday morning, we'd wake up and there's a new guy coming out of the bedroom. Like, that's the shit you do when you're 20, 21, 22. Once you have kids, knock it the fuck off. Grow up. You're not there to fucking have fun anymore. Sacrifice. Be there for your children.
And I'm sorry to say this, but your mother sounds like a person that shouldn't have children. Very irresponsible, because you know, being a parent, we all are parents in this room.
Right.
The amount of in the enormous sense of responsibility that you have. To give you, for instance, here's somebody who's not ready, because I've run into this. Mm-hmm. Versus, I'm going to use myself as an example. Friend of mine found out his girlfriend was pregnant and said, "Oh, I guess I'm not going to be able to play golf and go skiing." Like, seriously, when I found out my wife was pregnant, I got hit with this wave of panic going, shit just got real. Right. I got to get off my ass and do the right thing.
Yeah, I feel like I know a guy that's very similar to that. But the saddest part, when I found out I was going to be a dad, it was like, fuck, gung-ho. Like, I couldn't wait to get rid of my own hobbies. I mean, now it's a little different. I've been a parent for a few years.
But I was going to say, someone who lived through what you lived through, you probably had it in your mind that you're never going to let your kids go through that.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But it's the gym mentality. You know, it requires work to become something, right? That's a good statement. It requires work to become something. If a kid goes through nothing, the first time they ever get yelled at is in their boss's office, it's going to be fucking devastating. Yeah. They're not going to work ever again. So, I mean, do my best.
It's that equal balance.
Right, right. It's the ups and the downs. It's the roller coaster. It's everywhere. And at 8 or 9, I needed the escape because I was learning these things and I was starting to figure it out. And I tried to commit suicide. I had a hockey net. I'm pretty confident my grandfather made me this hockey net out of the old cast iron, like screw-in pipe. And I took it apart. I was done. I was ready to escape this world. Because
at 8 or 9?
I think I was 9. I'm pretty close. Wow. Yeah. Because where am I going? I don't know how to live out. If I run away, the cops are going to pick me up. And guess where they're going to bring me?
Right back.
Right back. So that's retarded. Anywhere I go, as soon as they identify me, they're bringing me right back to this shithole. So that's not really an escape. That's just
a delay.
Exactly. Yeah. And now I'm going to be in fucking trouble too, because why the fuck did you run away? You know, it is what it is. So to me at 9, my logic was fuck it, end it. So I take this hockey net and we had bunk beds. I wrap it around my neck, get a nice knot, and I put it over the top of the the bunk bed, and they were solid bunk beds. The government issued bunk beds that you get are just solid wood, probably made by the blind or something like that. But
made in China.
It's not the Amazon, like the thin metal shit, or, you know, it just was a solid thing. So I put it up there. I hold one end and I'm losing vision. I'm losing everything. I see it all going away and everything goes black. And I guess in hindsight, at that point, I was like, this is it. You know, home run, right? First fucking time. Hell yeah. Like, I'm a champ, you know?
You didn't try to cancel out at the last minute?
No, no. I don't know if he was a stepdad at the time, but my youngest sibling's father, I'm pretty sure it was him, walked in the room and was like, holy fuck, ripping me down and everything. And I made it. At the time, like, fuck. Like, it's the same with an overdose. You give Narcan, they're like, you ruined my fucking high. Dude, no, you were fucking dead, asshole.
Dude, what are you doing?
Right. So I made it, you know? Kudos, I made it. Not at the time, I didn't feel that way, but fuck, we got to get this kid some help. So they put me in, it used to be called Bergen Pines. You guys aren't Bergen County. Regional. You're a Bergen guy.
Bergen Regional.
Yeah, now it's Bergen Regional, but at the time it was Bergen Pines County Hospital, I think. Yeah. And they have the kids unit, you know, but I'm 9. Most of the kids in there are teenagers, you know, 12 to 17. So I wake up. Next morning, I remember going through it, but I wake up and the nurse that came in first was like, Mike, you don't have to tell anybody why you're here. So I'm like, all right, I don't even know like what to expect. But there's a lot of kids. There's like 40 fucking kids here. And they all have their own, as crazy as my story, they have their own. I go to the bathroom, I take a piss, I look in the mirror, and I have this fucking... like, holy shit, like, somebody tried to kill me.
So much for not telling anybody why you're there.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, I'm 9, you know, I'm trying to calculate all this shit. And I never kept anything a secret. You know, I didn't give a shit. So they're like, what the fuck happened to you? So I'm like, you should see the other guy. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I tried to kill myself. And they're like, how? Take a fucking guess, asshole. Like... I put a sewing needle through my leg.
You tried ripping my toenails off. Right. I bleed to death.
So, but that was actually a traumatic experience because I met other kids that attempted suicide in that place, in that hospital. I'd been there 13 times by the time I was 15.
From suicide attempts?
No. I was a victim of the 90s. You go in there, you get a diagnosis like fucking McDonald's. That's the first thing they give you is a diagnosis. They don't even care if you're alive. It's like, oh, this kid's got a problem. You know, he's got ADHD. He's got fucking social anxiety. I'm 9 years old.
But what do you think the reason for the diagnosis is? Is it like a cattle car where they got so many kids and they're trying to move them through?
I'm a conspiracy guy, Kev. I think the government and Big Pharma are in bed. I think there's money there. And I think you can't give somebody a fix to a problem if they don't have a problem.
Yeah, so they give you a problem.
And now you got a fix.
Now they give you the medication.
Right. So I've been on Adderall, Thorazine, Depakote, Prozac. I mean, I can't even think of all of them. And some of them are for, like, my stints when I was in the hospital and I start losing my mind. You know, I don't know if you've ever been locked up. It's the same fucking thing. I can't get out of that door. Only the guy with the key can get out of that door.
It is the most helpless. I've been in a hospital for... I might have taken some pills and washed it down with liquor.
Allegedly.
So I got put in a mental hospital. Yeah. And there are 6-foot beds.
What's a Bergen Pines? Bergen Pines is a mental
hospital. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Kinder, gentler on me.
So try laying down on a 6-foot bed when you're over 6 foot.
Yeah.
And they take your shoelaces. They take your belt. They strip search you. They do.
Chicken soup.
It's god awful. And it's cold and you can't get out and you can't scream because the bigger
you can as an adult. As a 9-year old,
well,
I screamed all the time.
Well, they already diagnosed you with something else and gave you something more.
You get jabbed with Vistarol and then all of a sudden you're like 1,700 pounds and you're collapsing and you go into la la la.
I was lucid enough to know that the bigger mess that I made, the longer I was going to stay in there. So you try to be a good boy.
I had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So while I was in there, my siblings, the first time I believe it was, I'm pretty confident they got taken out and put into foster homes. Because DIFAS, you know, once you're involved with the authorities, DIFAS gets called, CPS, we'll CPM. Call it, so everybody knows. Because DIFAS.
Back in the day, it was DIFAS.
And now it's DCPMP in New Jersey, which is another weird. But DIFAS was fucking terrible.
Yep.
Probably the worst experience of my life.
DIFAS was a good idea, executed the wrong way.
Correct. Because government run.
Yep.
I don't know any government programs that have been.
Well, they lost a bunch, especially in New Jersey, they lost a bunch of kids. And so they got clamped down on. We saw that with Roman Prokopchik.
Yep.
You know, he fostered over 30 kids until he was, he wanted to adopt because him and his wife couldn't have kids. And finally he finds one to adopt because he would get close to these kids and then they'd go back to their parents.
Right.
Yeah. It's a sad system.
It's, and I met some kids and it's, so the one home I was in, I wasn't in many homes because I sat with a DIFAS worker in front of prospective foster parents and heard my DIFAS worker say, you don't want him. He's a teenage boy and he's violent. The fuck are you gonna do?
Yeah, exactly.
We do. No, you're not gonna say that. Okay, next. I guess
that person is a failed car salesman.
I mean, so
thanks for the help with placement.
Yeah. What the and I'm gonna shit on DIFAS a lot in the next couple sentences or you know the next few minutes, but I know there's a lot of reform that's been done. So I'll apologize now to anybody that's really trying to get into it to make a difference because there you guys know the cops that are great and you guys know cops that are pieces of shit. I know DIFAS workers that some of them were great. Most of them at my time in, they were pieces of shit. They were there as a job, and I'll also defend them. I couldn't imagine having a caseload of 30 cases. My caseload had 5 kids in it. They have to see every kid at least once a month. 30 cases, mine had 5, so the average has to be somewhere in 2.5, right? Mm. 3 kids, 2, something like that. How do you see fucking 150 kids in a month? And provide a service to them. I don't have true parents at this point in my life. So how can this woman or this guy who's working 40 hours a week under the gun, see all these people, provide to them a service? And you know what I'm saying? That's got to be insane. I'll give a credit to them.
It's an overrun. There's too much business. There's too much business for them to handle.
Too much money to be made by a lot of people.
The fucked up part about a lot of that, and obviously I go on tangents. Welcome to the train. We're going to be going all over the place. My shit was thrown in a bag. Like, so 2 cops come in, a DIFAS worker comes in, and they're like, hey, you got 10 minutes. Put all your shit in this bag. What do you think the bag was? Hefty, 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 baby. Yeah, my stuff is trash. So 9, 10, 11 years old. What kind of message is that? Take all your belongings and put them in a garbage bag. There's no suitcase. There's no like, oh, everything's going to be okay. There's no warm, cozy feeling. My mother's in the other room crying because the cops are telling her she's a failure at being a mother and she's not fit to have children. Not saying it was a lie, but that's a hard thing to hear from a cop, you know. So, boom, another home, another home, another home. I seen kids, the one house I was in, the one kid was 3, the other kid was 5. They were brothers. They couldn't walk. And they had these club fingers. Like they looked like fucking lollipops. And first, I get into this home, and it's very cold, unwelcoming. It's not a family-friendly place. And I see these kids crawling on the floor, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? This is like bizarro world. Then I get into the bedroom, and all the paint is peeled off the walls. So their club fingers is because all the paint chips getting underneath their nails. They had lead poisoning. And, I mean, that was traumatic. I think I was 10 or 11 at that point, maybe 12. That was insane. And actually, I was 13 because that one, I was living with my grandparents, my mother's parents. He died. My grandmother was a frail old lady and she couldn't handle us anymore, me, my brother, and my sister. So she called DIFAS and had us go back into the foster care. So that sucked. I don't know if you ever lived with your grandparents, but when they kick you out into a foster home, it's hard. It's hard. That was the hardest.
I never did, but I just, again, if my kids have kids and they can't take them, guess what? I will.
Yeah. Right.
My last breath. It wouldn't happen with me.
Right.
I just had a friend of mine taking 2 of his nieces from Florida. Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Flew them up here.
And I harbored a lot of hate and a lot of bitterness towards everybody in my family because why the fuck am I in a facility?
Well, when you were going home to home to home to home.
Yeah.
Did you ever hold out hope that, okay, I'm going to find that magic family?
No. And I cut you off on purpose, Kev. I had survival mode. It was, this is life. This is how it's supposed to be. Just keep going. There's no give up. There's no quit. This is what life is. This is what you're supposed to do. This is every day. This is what everyone goes through every day. I didn't understand that there are some kids like my spoiled three brats. No, I'm kidding. I love them and they're not. But they can go to the fridge and get a bottle of water. Or my two-year-old goes into the cabinet, takes out Oreos. We're like, what are you doing? He's like, it's a cookie. Yeah, why are you eating it?
Yeah, sounds about right.
If I did that, I'd have been beat. I couldn't do it. So my life was totally different.
But it didn't stay that way forever.
No.
Okay.
But it was that way until I was about 15.
15. And then what changed at 15?
I got a new foster dad.
Okay.
And can we go back?
Sure.
All right. So every Sunday, as long as I wasn't in a facility, my father's father, my father was an only child. So his parents lost their only kid. My grandmother was paranoid schizophrenic. But every Sunday when he could, when I wasn't in a facility, he picked me up and we went to his house for the day, which gave whoever else I was with a break from me. Cause I was a little crazy, I think is a good word. And the first time I ever heard, I don't know, I did this or, sorry. My grandmother goes, did the voice in your head tell you to do that? I think I was 6. And I looked at her like, what the hell are you talking about? Did the voice in your head tell you to do that? And I'm like, Grandma, what do you mean? Like, I don't get it. So at 8-ish, I started to understand something was wrong with her. She used to berate my grandfather. You fucking piece of shit. You went to the grocery store. I said the red one. This is the blue one. You bastard. She thought Jews and Irish cops were out to get her.
They so probably were. They probably
I said, were, yeah, now as an adult, I mean, of this course. Is the truth. You know, she berated him. She's like, you Jew loving bastard. Why did you? She basically hated him. But they lost their only son or their only child, not just son. I couldn't imagine what they went through.
It broke her, probably.
It did. But I'm in a safe place, but it's fucking weird. My grandmother, clearly something's not right, you know? And she'd say, watch out if you go in the bathroom. There were blankets taped to the windows. She'd go in there to go to the bathroom in pitch black. I mean, pitch black. There wasn't a pinhole of light in that room at all. And that became normal to me. My grandfather didn't want to deal with it. So he had dishes outside in the garage. He had the grill, and he'd wash the dishes with the hose, cook all of his food year round, 365 days a year. He would cook his food on the grill and wash his dishes with the hose.
But he still was trying to provide something to his grandson.
Correct. But I couldn't live there. I couldn't, because obviously grandma was sick. You know, I knew that. But it hurts because my grandfather was there for me from day one. No matter what, every single visit that I could have had, he was there with a meal that he cooked on the grill. But
he used the best food.
So listen to this shit. He used to take this. He had this steel plate. He'd put it on the grill so it'd be red hot. He'd cook a steak. He'd put the steel plate under the steak. So when he got to Bergen Pines, he could give me a hot meal. I didn't think about it until I became an adult. He just brought a fucking molten hot piece of steel into a mental institute, and nobody stopped him.
Yeah, it's the 90s. It's a little crazy.
Yeah.
But when did it all change? Like what? Because I know you got into a place that was a little bit.
The best thing that ever happened to me in that sense was National Night Out. There was a Passaic County Sheriff, I think. I lived in Garfield at the time. Passaic County Sheriff, I think his name's Doug Laverty. He saved my life. He threw this event. Now, I had done drugs. I'd slept in a park because my mother would kick me out. And now I'm old enough where I don't have to end up back in the hospital, yada, yada. We go to this National Night Out, me and my brother. I was 14. He was 7, somewhere around there. There's this weird-looking dude, got a wrestling belt on his shoulder. He was like, Kevin, do you know who I am, brother?
I'm going to hear about this one for a while.
Forever.
That's right. The Wally Green clip will just keep playing.
Just do me a favor. Call my wife, Katie. That's her name.
I will absolutely do that.
So my brother sees this guy. I mean, mean, who at seven, who the hell doesn't want to talk to the wrestler? You know what I mean? So he introduces himself. I'm Richie Rotten. Okay. I don't give a shit at that. I'm smoking weed. I'm doing my own thing. I'm never home. But my brother can't go to the National Night Out by himself. So I'm with him. Now, my brother wants to go to this wrestling school. So my mother brings him, but he's not allowed to go by himself. So I go. It wasn't bad. It wasn't weed. It wasn't what I thought was fun, but it was a place to go that was pseudo healthy, if that makes sense.
Safer.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'm going. Now my brother doesn't want to go, but I'm still going. So this guy, Rich, he's the coach, if you call him that. And we start building a relationship, and he sees the type of family that I'm with and some of the crazy shit that I've gone through, which I've left 80%. So you could have round seven if you want. Call me. Well, whoever drops out, just call me. It'll be the Suffering of Mike podcast. I'm going there. He starts saying, hey, I'm going to go to this show. This blues band is playing. You want to come? Sure. He goes, all right, we'll tell your mother. You don't have to fucking tell my mother. I could do whatever the fuck I want. You know, I'm 14 years old, you know? So we start building this bond. We're doing this for a while. And in that time frame, my sister, my oldest sister, the one that's my true blood, I believe she got raped. And she starts peeing on herself and bad stuff. And I've never been raped. I don't know what it's like. They put her in Bergen Pines. Now, Bergen Pines had two children's units. You might know that. Yeah. So there's C1 and FG. Those are the names of the units. My little sister at that point, my youngest sister, she gets put into Bergen Pines. The house is a zoo. It's fucking crazy. Somewhere, I know the time frame after the story, but I want to get high. I'm dead fucking broke. I got no money. I want to go smoke weed, but I got nothing. You know what I do have, though? 8,000 medications in the cabinet because I've been prescribed everything under the damn sun. So I go, and I'm like, Ritalin don't do shit. This thing don't do shit. Adderall, motherfucker, let's go. I pop 10 of them, and I'm like, yes, this is going to be a ride, you know? And then I'm like, wait a second. I might fucking die. I'm petrified, man. Like, holy shit. What am I going to do? It's like 4 in the morning. My mother and whoever she's with at the time is sleeping, and I'm like, now I'm paranoid, but you ever see like specks on a floor? No, yeah. Not dirt, but like his design. They're all crawling. I have headphones like this on, and I'm listening to music at the fucking volume 400, and I start hearing people go, Michael, I'm coming, and I'm like, holy shit, like it's bizarre. I'm like, fuck, I'm really going to die. 911. So they bring me to Bergen Pines. I get my stomach pumped. And then we find out my sisters are on both of the children's units. They can't take me. So Dyfus is like, all right, you can go home. And it's weird because judges made more decisions in my life as a kid than my parents. Well, than my mother. So that's a weird way to grow up when the government controls you. I didn't have say of my own. This is Uncle Sam. That's where my hatred of the government comes in. But podcast 3 on that one. I end up in St. Mary's in Hoboken. They have a CCIS, Child Crisis Intervention Services unit. It's empty. There's two other people there. There's more staff than kids. And I'm like, you know what? I need to clean up. I need to change my life. I need to get better. Like, what? This is my 16th time in a fucking hospital. I'm 15 years old. What the fuck is going on? Like, this isn't right. At this point, I've been exposed to normal people, you know, families that speak and love and hug and eat dinner together type shit.
You've never seen before.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but I've been exposed to it, and I kind of want that. Like, it seems really nice. So I'm thinking about it. Now, there's a lot of attention because I'm only one of three kids here, and there's seven fucking staff running around, so they're going to be up my ass. And I don't know if you've ever seen St. Mary's in Hoboken. I think it's different now, but they're on the 7th floor. World Trade Center is right across the fucking river. It's like looking out that window, and it's right there. It's cool. And all I can picture is Kevin from Home Alone, going to the top, and I'm like, you know, I've never been to the city for anything other than weed. I want to stand on that motherfucker. The next morning was 9/11. I watched the whole fucking thing. I watched the first plane. I watched the second plane. I watched the towers fall. The weirdest part of 9, and I know you've revisited 9/11 with a few people. That's why I'm going further in depth. The hospital PA went off. Bah! External plan D. Bah! External plan D. And it was very Cold War-esque. That was the day I was supposed to leave the hospital. Dyfus was supposed to come pick me up. Because when you're being confined, you can over 15, you can challenge the hospital and say, you either commit me in 3 days or you have to, by law, release me. And it's business days. So today's my fucking day. I'm leaving. I'm getting out of this bitch. Well, then Dyfus closed. All government offices closed down. So I didn't give a shit about 9/11. I didn't really understand it. I didn't care. It was something happened outside. It didn't affect me. But I'm stuck for at least another day here. In that time frame, somewhere, I don't know if it was before that, after that, this guy Rich, this wrestling guy, calls me. He says, "Do you need a place to live?" I guess so. I mean, I'll fucking survive. I'll figure it out. But yeah. He's like, "All right, I'm going to take a couple weeks off and I'm going to go to foster parent classes. I'm going to try to get you." Cool. Thanks. The next day I get out. Dyfus doesn't know where to put me. There's a shelter in Hackensack, Conklin. You might be
Conklin from, home.
Okay. I end up in Conklin. Conklin is weird, man. It's a homeless shelter for kids. It's bizarre. I don't know why it exists. It should be all homes and houses. This is a school building that has beds in it. And it's very uncomfortable, very cold, uninviting. And it was torture. Now these are some bad fucking kids in here. This is more along the lines of jail than the hospital was. And man, I hated being there, but I can't go to Rich until he's a foster parent and it goes through the judge and it, you know, I mean, you guys have kids.
Yep.
If they went into your fridge when they were at your house and they took a glass of orange juice and drank it or whatever it is in your fridge, that's not even a situation you can envision because it's normal. I'd be fucking shit on. I'd be screamed at. I'd get my ass kicked. But why'd you steal the orange juice?
But Rich eventually does get you.
So I move in with Rich finally. And there's drama. I mean, every single fucking day of my life up until this point, I never had a day where it was like, that was a good day. It never happened. So I move in with Rich and it's fucking awkward. I think he was 31. I was 15. He's 31. In hindsight, I couldn't imagine at 31, when I was 31, taking anybody in, never mind a 15-year-old. And a 15-year-old that had been sort of free. I lived my life the way I wanted to fucking live it. Fuck my mother. She doesn't know what she's talking about. I did what I wanted. Now he goes, "All right, you're going to be home at 8. That kind of, and it's like, 8? I'm going out at 8. What are you talking about? You know, it was hard. But at the end of the day, that guy, he's my kid's papa. That's my dad. You know, I'll tell stories now to people, and I'm like, the only reason I say my foster dad is out of respect for my father, my biological father. But he's not my foster dad. He's my fucking dad.
I've heard you speak very fondly of him.
Because he's a great man. How do you sacrifice your whole life for some piece of shit 15-year-old? That's a dickhead. I was a piece of shit.
Is he still with us?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like an episode.
He's younger than you two. No, he's he's in between. I think he's 52.
So there are people out there that are genuine. They're far and few in between, but there are genuine. And he saw this, that not everybody is heartless. Not everybody doesn't care. There are people out there who do care. The problem is picking and choosing.
Right.
So with most of the world is transactional. Mm-hmm. Okay. I will help you because you have an asset.
Something that I need.
That I need.
Right.
There are some people out there that forego transaction in order to do what's right.
I like to think of myself as one of them, but
I think it's to some extent. So you live the rest of your childhood life with Rich?
Yes.
Okay.
So I aged out of the system. Unfortunately, my youngest sibling, I think she was eight or nine when I aged out. So I was still technically an open case with Dyfus for another fucking 10 years.
So you couldn't even take your siblings?
I might have been able to. I was a newly born child at 15.
Right.
I'm finally going to an arcade or whatever the fuck I did.
Experiencing things that normal children.
I'm not getting yelled at for taking a cup of water out of the fridge. Wait, there's no sirens. Yeah. There's nobody screaming. Nobody's jumping over the wall to beat the shit out of me because I took a cookie it's such a weird relationship with me and Rich. I love that guy to death. And I think I've only told him that like twice. I think put yourself at 31, taking a 15-year-old that you've never had a kid before. He was never married or anything. So I moved in with him and immediately, I think he just tried to do his best from day one, 100% be his best.
He doesn't have any other kids.
No.
All right. So he's learning on the job.
Oh yeah. Big time. So as far as I remember the first night he goes, I love you, man. What? Like in my head, like, my mother used to say it to me all the time, and I used to leave her notes. When I went to bed, my bedroom door had like slats in it. I'd fold up a post-it card, and I'm like, you're a worthless piece of shit. I'd put it in there. I'd be like, hey, Judy, check my door before you go to bed. And now she pulls a note that says you're a worthless piece of shit. And there were many a nights I heard her crying outside of my door. And I'd be like, stop fucking crying. You're useless.
Wow.
It got to that point. But at that point, at 13 years old, 14, she can't beat me up. I'm capable of beating her up now.
Now, have you had any contact with your mother?
It's not PG. It's well, very bad.
So you've had contact.
16 years old. I said, you know what?
As an adult. Moving on, you're with Rich?
No. No. And so 16, I was with Rich, and it was Mother's Day. I said, you know, let me be a decent human being. Human to human. And I'll tell you right now, from time to now, I've forgiven my mother. I actually have a little bit of sympathy and empathy for her to an extent.
Do you know where she is?
I think she's in Kentucky with one of my siblings. I don't know. I'd say I don't care, but I genuinely don't care. But in my heart, I genuinely have forgiven her. At 16, I called her. Now, my youngest two siblings were put up for adoption by her. She claims that the government kind of forced her to do that. Like the judge said, you have to do this. And from my perspective, she signed her rights away. Well, she didn't fucking sign. It didn't fucking happen.
Exactly. They can't put your pen in your hand and put it on a paper. Right. You got to sign it willingly.
And even if that is the case with what she's saying is to be true, change your fucking act. And then they're not going to force you to give them up. So either you signed it willingly or you willingly let them go because you failed to fucking become a decent mother. Excuse my language, but it pisses me off because I can't imagine not doing every single thing in my power to protect my children at all costs.
But it sounds like you're breaking those generational curses.
You have to.
All right?
You have to.
Is it a conscious decision or was it something that's just you want to do because you did not have?
It's both. Yeah. You ever stub your toe?
Yeah, you know, plenty of times.
The same night for the same way for 6,000 nights in a row.
Every Wednesday night.
At some point, you have to say, this fucking blows. I got to stop doing this. I either got to move where I step or I got to move the thing that I'm kicking.
Or you just get it. Eventually you got to get off the merry-go-round.
That's the other side of it. Yeah. If you're walking in a fucking circle and you keep kicking every time you come around.
Time to grab another circle.
Right.
Right. Sounds like Rich took care of you. And it,
yes.
And it also, so I think things like this, here's my take on it, sort of to summarize everything, is you went through this horror.
Mm-hmm.
But do you understand something that you may had to have gone through this horror because your kids needed you to do that?
It's very possible.
You know, your kids needed a good father because maybe just if you didn't get off that merry-go-round and your kids had the father that you were destined to be,
right,
they might not have been as strong as you and they might not have survived.
And they might have fallen into the same trap also.
Correct. Yeah, it's definitely possible.
Maybe one of your kids is destined to do something seriously great in this world, and I'm sure they're going to do great things, but maybe seriously life-changing in this world, and somebody okay, we got to put this guy, this poor kid is going to be a sacrificial lamb. We got to put him through all this stuff in order to get the end result, which is going to benefit everything.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's possible. I hate to say, I feel like I was that guy.
Sounds like a conspiracy to me.
Bum, bum. I was that guy. Yeah. And I feel like with the lack of that father, I never achieved it. Then with Rich, one of the first things he said to me was, you can do anything in the world with enough time, money, and energy. Or a combination of the three. I'm like, what do you mean? You want to be in the NBA? Yeah, I never played basketball. Right, if you had enough time, money, and energy, you can be great at it and join the NBA or however the fuck that works. Anything in the world, you can do it with enough of one of the three or all of the three of those things. And that stuck with me forever.
Well, Coop, my hat's off to Rich.
Yeah,
because
you'll meet him one day.
Rich sounds like a wonderful guy, but we are coming to the end of this thing here already.
Yeah.
Oh boy,
yeah,
that was quick.
It's still hot,
and we haven't touched. That's why I'm not trying to move around too much. I don't want to start sweating.
Oh, Kevin on the airplane.
Kevin on the airplane.
That's right. Just whenever you need to emulate my calm, just say Kevin on an airplane, and just sit there like this.
I'll get mad.
So, you've gone through some pretty horrible stuff, and we sort of brushed over a lot of it.
Oh yeah.
But you've learned some stuff from it. You've had to have learned some stuff from it.
Have you gone to the gym?
Yes.
So to get the bicep and the vein pump in your forearm, you have to go through some shit, right?
His right forearm's a lot.
That's all I need right there. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying.
But you've had to learn something. What do you think this suffering of being a foster child has taught you?
Not everyone's a dickhead. People are generally good. People generally do the right thing. People generally love. But I never felt that prior to 15. Never.
Well, luckily you were able to experience it even for an abbreviated moment.
It was in part two.
That's
through seven. We'll go over how.
But that's the gratitude of your situation.
Oh, yeah.
The gratitude.
Yeah.
Because you embraced all that and you became the man you are today. And that makes you a big person.
I mean, what, the alternative, look at the statistics on foster kids. Yeah. Dead, in jail, on drugs, in a gang.
And then you had you throw in the mix of a fatherless existence, 70 to 80% of incarcerated males come or people come from a fatherless home.
Right.
So that's a real statistic.
And that's hard. It's hard.
But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you made it through. I'm glad that you're a better father to your kids than you had. And I'm grateful for you. Thank you so much for coming in.
And I'm sure we'll expand on this another day.
Yeah, we got to get in. We got to take it piece by piece and cut it up and say, okay, let's
do this.
We got to give Mike borders, though. We got to say, okay, this is what you're allowed to talk about today.
When I told you I had notes for this, you should have said, yeah, go get your damn notes because I think I'm still in the first three lines on the six pages.
Well, so there's a whole other thing that I want to get into you, and I do want to have you back in here if you're willing to come.
Of course.
There is something, you know, you joining the military and becoming a veteran.
Getting divorced.
Well, there's that.
There's that too.
Well, we could talk about that.
So there's a lot more to this story, but today I just wanted to focus on your foster care experience. And thankfully, you weren't lost into the system. You could have been.
I was till I was pulled out.
But until you were saved.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in tonight.
It's been a blast.
I'm sure we're going to see you next for a few more episodes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Suffering Podcast, the suffering of a foster child. And let's think about all the stuff that we learn. There are no flat roller coasters. Ups and downs are part of life. It's amazing what some people can see as normal. Mike's wife's name's Katie. There are people who care. But most importantly, parents are not always blood. And that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to go to popple.com, get your digital business card, put in the code TSP20 for a 20% discount. Follow us on all social media. That's Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram.
OnlyFans.
Follow Mike at Mike_Fillets. Follow me at Real Kevin Donaldson. And of course, follow the Suffering Podcast. And we will see you on the next episode.